Show with Anna DeVlantis. Right here on 720 WGN and CLTV. And this is September 11th, 2018. 17 years ago today. Anybody who lived through it remembers it. And Bart McCartan is a Chicago businessman and a philanthropist, and also I should mention that he's the chairman of the corporate board of directors of the Boys and Girls Club of Chicago, and he's certainly a guy who likes to give back. And Bart, you and I have known each other for a while, and your story of September 11th is one that I often tell other people. And I thought this would be a good opportunity for us to talk a little bit about it, because you were a volunteer firefighter, right?
Correct. Yes, I was a volunteer and part time out in the near suburbs of Chicago. That is correct.
All right. And that's not. And you've been in business, right? And you know, went to college and grad school and been in business. But this, you just sort of had this idea, this desire, this first responder kind of desire to also do that if people were in need. And so then the next, you're watching, take me through the morning of September 11th for you.
Well, in 9/11, 17 years ago now, we had our family construction businesses, in Chicago, in Industrial Union Construction. And we were sitting in a staff meeting and had a TV on in the background in the conference room. And as everything began to unfold, like the rest of the country, I think just the absolute surreal and unreal began to kind of peel apart on live television as to what was starting to take place in both New York and then ultimately in D.C. and in Pennsylvania. And shortly thereafter that, within hours of the second tower coming down, a number of first responders, primarily from the city, that both were dear friends and family, came together and started to contact each other that for sure there was going to be a group that was going to organize and wanted to go to New York and who wanted to try to go and be a part of that. And collectively, we grouped up and got into a caravan, and in the coming days, in the first several days of the response, ended up in New York and in the midst of the one and two World Trade Centers in the middle of the site.
Explain what that was like when you first got there.
Again, that word surreal, I think, rings out and is especially prevalent as it relates to the conditions that not only first responders, but that the countless volunteers that came from all over the country experienced when they got there. To walk into a situation where both one and two World Trade Centers were down, that skeletal piece of two World Trade Center was still up in the air that everyone saw iconically on the news over and over. But then you had one financial plaza was literally blown out, all the glass and the dust. You had 7 World Trade Center was on fire and had ultimately just collapsed. 3 World Trade Center, the Vista Hotel, collapsed, was on fire. You had countless buildings around it with heavy destruction, and it was certainly surreal to see that in the middle of Midtown Manhattan in the financial district, and to just see not only the level of devastation, but the eerie silence that had taken over the city.
The people, yeah. Bart, I talked to, and I wonder about your experience with this. Firefighters who I know who came from this area went out that way, said they'll never forget the dust, they'll never forget the smell, and they remember that whenever someone was found, a body was found, that people would stop and either say a prayer, salute, or do something to mark that moment. It was such an emotional thing to be involved with.
Yeah, that's very true. I think, to say the least, to say that this was an emotional roller coaster when you got there and throughout the entire process, especially for that first week, it was exactly that. The smell was horrific, from a combination of burning, it was a burning oily jet fuel type smell, along with other just really pungent tough smells alongside of The fact that, you know, you were trying to, I guess the toughest part that you would go up against emotionally was the fact that you got there because you wanted to try to help in any way possible, specifically and especially. I mean, whether that meant trying to help people off the site, on the site, we were fortunate enough to get into the site. And the expectation was is that you wanted to try to find people, and you didn't. But what would happen was is that there would be a stopping of the entire ground operations to try to hear if people were still alive or trapped, and you would get false readings many times. People would work furiously, I mean furiously and emotionally, to try to get to different areas to try to respond to where people were at to no avail. And then what you would find is remains, and you would do your very best to treat that with the respect and dignity that you could, so that that could be returned to family members. And New York walked their own out, whether it was police or fire. There was a system that they came up with that as they went throughout those days, that as they recovered, especially emergency workers and first responders, that was very reverent and done with the greatest sense of sincerity to respect.
Yeah. I was there 2 weeks after, and I will never forget the smell is, to me, it's just, it was, you'll never smell it again, because there was also, you know, molten steel, right?
That's
there was,
right.
It was, there was molten steel. It was, as you pointed out, I mean, there was a very biological smell there as well. And the ground was hot. I mean,
that's right.
Literally I think, and you talked to like Bart and the other first responders who were there, and you know, they talk about even though they have equipment that keeps their boots from melting, it was incredibly hot in that site, because it literally was a smoldering sort of center fire that was going on underneath there for weeks.
That's exactly right, Ro. And because of all the burning, you know, you had burning materials underneath, everything was highly compacted. You had, you know, multiple levels and layers underground that, you know, had taken on both collapse, as well as there were pockets of air and forced air from the subway tunnels that then was, you know, pushed
feeding
up against
the fire, right?
Burning fuel and steel. And you would, you know, in certain areas of the pile that you'd be working in, that, you know, and again, that evolved on a daily basis as different areas opened up, but you'd burn you could burn up your boots. You'd had to be very cautious with where you went. The holes would open up, areas would open up. It was extremely dangerous. And by the way, while that's all going on, you know, another major part of the emotionality of all this was the fact that the unthinkable had just happened to this in this country. So at that time, rumors were running as rampant as to what was going to happen next at the exact same time it paralleled the rescue efforts. So yeah, there were concerns throughout that there could have been explosives buried in vehicles in the underground parking decks in the way that it was bombed in 93. There were concerns about what they called the slurry wall, or the bathtub was what they referred to it in slang there, is against the Hudson River was going to breach, and, you know, water was going to flood into many of the voids that rescue workers were in and trying to respond through. So it was quite the up and down of emotions, and really was something that I will never, ever, ever forget.
So let's talk about you spent more than a week there, right, as a first responder, and then
yes,
came out. And talk a little bit about what that felt like coming out. It's such a weird feeling in New York in those weeks and months really afterwards, and you're looking at that space and you remember what that space was, right, in your mind's eye, or people who lived there for sure, and then it's gone. And then you go a couple blocks north. Well, I mean, basically once you got about 10 blocks north of the site, it turned back into New York. And it
That's
was
right.
And New York was active and moving, and with the exception of the West Side Highway, it was all open. And it was such there's a surreal nature of a real thing going on, such death and destruction in this area, and then out to real humans trying to live their lives. So you come back to Chicago, which is, you know, completely, thank God, was completely intact. And what was that like as you were sort of reemerging into friends and family?
Well, to say the least, I mean, coming back, you know, going out there, you're full of adrenaline, you're full of hope, you're full of focus, you're full of, you know, we want to try to do whatever we can to help. And then you get there and you experience the reality of the situation, and you experience the reality of a lot of the devastation that take place. And as you're coming back, you know, what seems to be a 6-7 hour car ride on the way out turns, feels like 3 days driving home. And you come back and you try to then process and take in the experiences emotionally, physically. You came back exhausted. Virtually everybody came back with some form of a cough from all the dust and debris, and really starting to process what happened. And it was very tough. It's sad. There's a lot of post-stress issues that go on there that come from that, in terms of being able to talk through what you experienced and how you experienced it. But I will tell you that at the exact same time that was a major part of the experience, you know, initially, I don't want to in any way forget to say or to speak to the fact that while you're in New York, you know, New York is still alive and moving and vibrant city as it is. And the absolute thing that did take place there throughout the entire rescue effort, throughout the entire recovery effort, the way home and when we got home, was just an overwhelming sense of positive and good human spirit, and how Americans came together and how all people came together, regardless of political aspirations or parties or what anybody's personal agendas were. People came together in a way that I have never seen in my 46 years of life on this earth, that came together to support one another and to do the right thing. And sometimes that meant, while we were there, people were coming out and passing out sandwiches or toothbrushes and toothpaste, or people were giving medical services or massage services or anything you could have possibly imagined. When that word surreal doesn't do it justice, all of those things really and just truly created an overwhelming sense of good over evil, because make no mistake, this was a very, very evil thing that took place in this country. And that sense of good is what I think gave at least myself and the guys that went there and volunteered to try to help. It was the major factor, I think, that gave us the opportunity to keep going. Mm-hmm. And it's what gave us the opportunity to feel good when we got home, as it related to knowing that we tried to do something. And, you know, that sense of spirit and help is something that just really, I think, showed the world what this country's all about and what 9/11 was all about. But, you know, make no mistake, the true heroes of 9/11, you know, were the first and foremost, the initial first responders, the 343 firefighters and 60 police officers that gave their lives, who walked into something that many of them, especially in the second wave, they knew what they were walking into. They knew full on that they were walking into something they weren't going to walk out of, and they still went in there. And then you take that and you look at all the civilians, the thousands of civilians who perished in this, and you take all of them and their families, the first responders and their families. You had hundreds upon hundreds of civilians who helped inside those towers and around those towers to help get people out. You know, those folks absolutely, they executed one of the largest ground rescues in the history of this country, in the history of the world, probably. They saved tens upon tens of thousands. And the fact that they died for doing that and for overcoming a really bad thing that happened here, I think it was that sense of good over evil and that sense of what people tried to do to come from every corner of this country to help in every single way possible that really made the turn of the tide. At least I know it did for me. It's something I will never forget and something that's had a huge impact on my life.
Bart, thank you very much for sharing the story. I appreciate it. Bart McCartan, who is the principal and managing partner of NIS, but is also the corporate, the chairman of the board of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Chicago. An American hero, a Chicago hero. Bart, thanks very much for being with us, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bart.
Not at all. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. All right.
Good story.
Yeah, this guy wears a suit by day and, you know, is a volunteer firefighter. And that's what he did. And he came back. You know, he doesn't really like to talk about it a lot, but there was a lot of a lot of the guys he came back with had a lot of medical problems and others as a result of just going and doing the right thing. So
I can only imagine.
Yeah. All right, Judy, what's coming up at the top of the hour?
The hurricane's already hit Wall Street.